This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Good evening, this is Lefty Pinkos on Joy 94.9. I'm Emma. Patrick is panelling and stuff.
Hello, Emma. Good to be here, as always.
And tonight, we are going to be discussing domestic violence. For the past 40-odd years, we've been trying to face up to the hidden shame and tragedy of domestic violence. Much progress has been made since the 70s in how we deal with it. The shame of this is that domestic violence is increasing and seems to be getting more extreme in what is being reported. A task force reported to the Queensland Government a couple of weeks ago presented a 380-odd page report, and a Royal Commission has commenced work in Victoria. As a community, it appears we have a huge amount of work to do. We'll be joined tonight by Fiona McCormack from the Domestic Violence Victoria. She'll be on the phone. And Travis Larkham, who is sitting next to me, who is currently studying for his Master's in Global Communication. He's done some research into domestic violence in the LGBTI community, and we'll be happy to hear from him. Not a happy topic tonight, I'm afraid, but I think these are conversations we need to have. You're on Lefty Pinkos. We are joined on the phone now by Fiona McCormack from Domestic Violence Victoria. Perhaps before we start this discussion, I thought we would mention for our listeners, if they need support, advice or counselling in relation to domestic violence, they can call Safe Steps Family Violence Response Centre, 1800 015 188. National Sexual Assault Family and Domestic Violence Counselling Line, 1800 737 732. QLife 1800 184 527, or if you've been assaulted, dial 000 immediately. We will repeat those numbers at the end of the show.
We will, and also place anything on our Facebook page as well. Also, if you want to get involved with the conversation tonight, please SMS us on 0427JOY949, email onair@joy.org.au, or give a call to Gordon at the front desk. Hello, Gordon, and thank you very much, on 1300JOY949. So first off, let's just introduce Fiona properly to yourself, listeners, because Fiona McCormack is the CEO of Domestic Violence Victoria, the peak body for family violence services for women and children in Victoria. Domestic Violence Victoria provides political advocacy on behalf of and in partnership with its member organisations for violence prevention, systematic change and enhancement of systems. Most of Fiona's working life has focused on issues affecting women. I'm just talking about you, Fiona. I don't know. You may want to cut in here if it feels like I'm just going to be talking about you instead of to you. Fiona represents the family violence sector on statewide and ministerial committees. Highlights of her work, including presenting in Shenyang. Sorry, was that correct?
Yes,
as part of the China-Australia Human Rights Technical Cooperation Program and the UN Commission on the Status of Women. Now, thank you again for joining us tonight.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yes, it's always an absolute pleasure to have people talking about. And this is, of course, a very serious subject. But Emma, let's start it up.
We might as well make it start. This is a huge topic, and I don't think we're going to get through it tonight, Fiona, anyway. But we'll have a crack at starting. A real basic question to start off with. What are we referring to when we refer to domestic violence?
Yeah, look, I think, Emma, we can tend to think of the physical or focus on the physical, and certainly when you see campaigns, not just in Australia but internationally, they can tend to focus on, you know, bruises and scars and things like that.
Evidence of assault,
that's exactly right. And of course that's part of it. But working in the area of family violence is kind of a little bit like reading the same book over and over. You know, women come in and they will say things like, they will tell their story and you see the same thing. So it's a pattern of behaviours, and it's all meant to intimidate and control. So women will say things like, he behaves so badly that none of my friends come over, or he forbids me to see my family. So there's social isolation, and that means that women can lose their sounding board of what's normal in a relationship. They can be put down, you know, constantly criticised, nothing's ever good enough, and also blamed for the violence that they're experiencing. Financial abuse, you know, accruing debt in her name, his debt in her name. What else? Things like sexual violence, maybe jeopardising her employment. So ringing her wherever she's working constantly, or hiding the keys so that she can't get to work on time. A range of different things. So, as I said, it's a pattern of abusive behaviours, and they're all intended to intimidate and control. Even the physical violence isn't necessarily just about, well, it's not about losing of temper or, being frustrated or feeling disaffected. It's actually, they do it because it's effective. It's an effective means of having somebody too scared to do anything and having the ultimate control.
By the time women are coming forward and seeking help in this area, they will have been subject to this sort of abuse, violence, assault, controlling behaviours for some time, haven't they?
Yeah. I think that's one of the challenges, Emma, because we have, you know, we're a community that we've got a good quality of education, and we have access to information. You know, we've never had the kind of access to information that we have today. And yet our understanding of violence is so rudimentary. And I don't think that many women really appreciate that they're in abusive relationships, because women can think, oh, he's not hitting me. And the justifications for violence and the victim blaming is so strong in our community and reinforced in so many explicit and tacit ways that women can really doubt themselves. You know, so women can be, you know, terribly financially abused or psychologically or emotionally abused in really horrific ways, or having to be involved in sexual behaviour that they don't want to, being pressured to do things that they don't want to, and not necessarily call it. I think young women experience horrific rates of violence, and yet we can tend to think this is of just an issue that affects, you know, middle-aged women who have kids and, you know, who are married or in steady relationships. But I think young women can experience, date rape, harassment, sexual harassment in the workplace, really abusive relationships, and not necessarily call it for what it is. So you're spot on. We often don't see women until it's really, really a crisis point.
You are on Lefty Pinkos here on Joy 94.9.
Fiona, just a quick question, because we see some horrific statistics about the number of calls the police in Victoria receive in a year, and the stats might be a year or so old, but they are horrendous. Mm. And that I've got my calculator out, and it almost worked out that by the time it takes us to run the show tonight, on average, 7 calls would have gone into Victoria Police. Mm. How big is this problem?
Yeah, look, it's huge, Emma. We've got, in 2013, we had 29 women and 8 children murdered just in Victoria alone. And it's important to consider that across Australia, the average, the official average statistic is a woman murdered every week, and yet, you know, we had that amount of women murdered just in Victoria alone in 1 year. And of course, we've had the 17 women murdered in 11 weeks just this year.
2015 has not been a good year.
No. And that means that's actually been 2 women every week. So that translates to double the national average.
What I can't get my head around with that is That's the extreme outcome from this issue. The sheer amount of misery in households that people are living with, women, children, the damage being caused is horrendous. And I guess that's what leads us to the next sort of area, the Royal Commission in Victoria. Okay. What do you want to get out of the Royal Commission?
Oh, look, there's so many different areas we need focused on. Number one, I think we've got a gaping hole in the system. So we've got, we hear comments made in the media a lot about the system's broken. I don't think it is. I think it is completely crippled by the weight of demand.
Right.
And under-resourced. But I think what it also is it's got a gaping hole in relation to our whole system in Australia is focused to responding to women when they seek support. So, police respond to women, women go to court, so the court responds to women. We have family violence services, we have refuge, things like that. And meanwhile, the problem, men who choose to use violence, is going unaddressed in any kind of systematic way. And all we're depending upon is intervention orders, and people criticise intervention orders, but they're actually an important part of our system. The only problem is, apart from intervention orders and men's behaviour change programs, which are really too late, we don't have a systematic approach to interrupting this violence. We're not sharing data about these men who use violence. We're not sharing data across different, courts, police, women's services, men's services. We haven't got enough interventions to do it. So they're currently going under the radar. So I would really like to see the Royal Commission deliver something that says, okay, here's what we're going to build in Victoria. I think even though it's a Victorian Royal Commission, I think it will need to focus on the nexus between state and federal issues, because we depend so much on what's happening in the federal sphere to be able to do well. So the family court, the family court's a debacle, women, we have good responses sometimes, but certainly not anywhere consistent, and we're not consistently assessing around risk for children. So, for example, women will be told 1 week by child protection, unless you can commit to ensuring that this child does not have access to his father, will remove your child. And then in the next week in the family court, they may be told it's really, really critical that your child has access to their father. It's, it's for their best interest. So we don't have a threshold at which we're looking at the point at which the risk to the child actually outweigh parental access.
I was just curious to know, when you've got those scenarios where they're saying it's critical for the child to have access to their father, in what particular, what is the concern that they're having? Is it more for the child's development as such, in which I disagree, or is it because if the child does not have access to the father, it may further endanger the child in future?
No, it's just an assumption that it's really, really critical for a child to have access, to have contact with their father.
And but he's if he's abusive and he's been causing problems, then sorry. I'm sorry.
I agree with you. Yeah. I
because
agree with you.
And it links back into this whole thing that we're having at the moment. I mean, this links especially with us at Joy 94.9. I mean, you had that whole thing with I am putting a curveball in here, and I will get back to domestic violence. I do apologise.
No,
the Australian Marriage Forum did that whole thing about that a child needs a mother and father. Well, what happens if the father is being violent, either physically or mentally or whatever, in any way intimidating to the mother? That is not a stable environment for a child. So telling them that a mother and father is important for a child's development is, quite frankly, a load of rubbish, and also invalidates single parents and people who raise parents in same-sex couples, which we will discuss further on later in the show. Sorry for my little rant there, Fiona.
I absolutely appreciate it.
And
I think it's closely linked. I think, we've got assumptions that that this is going to be good for a child. And I think it's giving primacy to the rights of men to have access to the child over the right for a child to be safe. And I think if you're perpetrating violence, and I think there can be an assumption that if he's perpetrating violence to the partner, to the child's mother, then, you know, that's not directed to the child. Well, that's, we know that that has an impact on children's development. I think, you know, we've got all these stereotypes, we've got all these prejudices, that the belief that somehow these kids have been, you know, brainwashed by their mothers to, you know, and we had in the National Community Survey on attitudes to violence against women, I can't remember the stat, but it was a really, really high stat of people believe that women deliberately use the family court to cut the father out of the child's life or to pay him back. And that's actually a myth. So I think we need to be, particularly with the number of children we're seeing murdered, we've got to ensure that we're keeping kids safe. And right now I think there's a whole range of different cultural beliefs in our community that we need to challenge in order to keep kids safe.
And I mean, especially, of course, the case of Luke Batty as well was a huge catalyst for that, which was...
Mm. But it's the ultimate attempt at control, isn't it?
Mm. That's right.
And it shows how deep, I'm going to use the word, how deep that control and power sickness can run, that any sense of right and wrong has gone.
Well, it's about revenge.
Yeah.
So because we know that the causes of violence against women are linked to this patriarchal concept of masculinity and also of femininity, you know, this is one of the key causal factors is this. So men who choose to use violence have these hyper-masculine attitudes about what it is to be a man, their rights as a man, the role of women. And that's why we see so many women and children being murdered when women leave, because they see it as a slight to their masculinity. That's why it's so critical that we are redefining gender stereotypes and challenging those stereotypes that see masculinity defined as superior, dominant,
masculinity right, being used know. as considered the epitome of humanity. So therefore, I was going to just point in one tiny factor with that because we are running out of time. But also, what I'm a little bit concerned about is especially this huge rise, and I want to talk about this on another show later, is this huge rise of the men's rights movement, which uses a lot of domestic violence statistics and skews it for their own benefit and then tries to add this sort of hyper-masculinity into there, which is what I find very frightening, is that some of the points, there's very minimal points here where they do talk about domestic violence against men. Yeah. However, most of those statistics are man on man causing violence, but they don't mention that because hyper-masculine men are in a heteronormative world where gays don't exist.
That's right.
Yeah. And of course, especially with these gender roles, I mean, we had that huge thing last year where it was like, well, what are toys good for girls and toys good for boys? It starts that early.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I do agree that it really does come down to making sure that, you know, that we've got these systems in place to look after the women who have been victims, but not looking after. What I'm saying is that there needs to be more preventative measures in place where we need to strip back and pull apart this patriarchy, which is causing so much death and violence and pain and misery.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. And that's the challenge. I mean, you know, the federal government's announced, you know, this campaign. They're going to put money into this campaign. And we've seen lots of awareness raising campaigns. We need to be done with awareness raising, because I think the general community have an understanding that violence against women is rife and it's bad. But where we're lacking is the causes, and that's where it can get a little bit confronting. You know, because we are challenging stereotypes, we're challenging the cultural norms in our society. And we're also talking about, you know, the other causal factor is the status of women, the and gender equity. Things like pay equity and, you know, equal number of women in cabinet and on boards.
I was about to mention that because we are talking about the federal government, whose International Women's Day event was held in an all-men's club.
Yeah.
You couldn't make this shit up. I'm sorry. You really couldn't.
The problem with these awareness campaigns is one of the accusations about governments is they've had reports for years. Every so often you go through a cycle and there'll be a report done, a study done, an inquiry done, and the politicians cherry-pick recommendations. A media campaign on awareness is just too damn easy.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to be the approach. I think it's also a bit of a symptom of a lack of coordination in Australia at the moment, and that the federal government's doing whatever the hell it wants, whatever that is.
Mm.
And the states are sort of left doing their own thing. And this one really needs to be a little more bipartisan, multi-state, multi-government, multi-agency, and I'm not sure we really have the mindset in Australia for that at the moment.
Yeah, but we're going to challenge it. And Fiona, thank you very much for joining us tonight. We are over time, but I would really appreciate your time, and we will continue the conversation as well, because that's also incredibly important to keep these conversations going.
Hey, thanks so much for having me on. It's been a real honour.
Okay, thank you very much, Fiona. You are on Lefty Pinkos here on Joy 94.9. Coming up, we are speaking with Travis about dealing with domestic violence. You're on Lefty Pinkos here on Joy 94.9 with a microphone that doesn't want to turn on. you are with Patrick and Emma. We are speaking particularly about domestic violence. We were just speaking, goodness gracious me, my voice is not working. We were just speaking with Fiona McCormick, the CEO of Domestic Violence Victoria. But now we have, who has been in the studio listening in, is Travis Larkham. Now, has worked variously as a training facilitator for HIV, AIDS and Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual and Transgender Health Promotion Agency as a support worker in a domestic violence refuge, as a tenant advocate for a tenancy housing rights organisation, and completed honours research into
statistics on domestic violence and LGBT relationships, for which he was awarded a special commendation by the Australian Lesbian and Gay Archives. Since 2014, he's been studying for his Masters in Global Media Communications at the University of Melbourne, and is due to complete his studies in a few months.
Yep.
Fantastic. Outside work, his passions include travelling, photography, science, all things political, culture, society, and, of course, beer appreciation.
We should get you a really nice boutique beer at the end of this. We also recommend that you always practice responsible drinking. And also, we would like to say that although we do kid around a little bit, but this is a very serious discussion, and I would like to apologise for if any of our flippant remarks have caused offence tonight, because that is definitely not my intention. Right, Travis.
Travis, regarding domestic violence in LGBTIQ relationships, is the prevalence of violence in these relationships any different to that of heterosexual relationships?
That's a good question, Emma. So, from the statistics that we have at this time, and mind you, I think we are in a bit of urgent need of some better statistics.
This is our crisis every week on the show, that we don't have community statistics.
Well, I think the important thing here is that we work out where there are the gaps, because there's room for improvement. But sorry, continue,
that's
Travis.
Okay. That was my thesis, actually. So,
okay. No numbers.
In a sentence, we need more statistics. Yeah. So it is, we think it's at least as common as in heterosexual relationships, but with the caveat that I think there are particular groups in the LGBTI community who, from the data that we do have, have reported experiencing higher levels of domestic violence victimization than in the heterosexual community. Lesbians in particular, the SWASH survey from Sydney has just found that, which was women only, including about 4% of respondents were transgender. 40% of those respondents had ever been abused by a partner, 26.5% of them were abused by a female only, and 2.6% were abused by both a female and a male, and about 11.3% of those had been abused by a male only. That 40% statistic is fairly consistent across the board, across studies. About 40% of queer women report ever having been experienced domestic violence. Some figures suggest
40%.
Yeah, that was what came out of also the Coming Forward report from Victoria in 2008.
My God.
And the Private Life Study in 2006 as well.
Yeah.
So that is a really high amount, and it's not only in opposite-sex relationships. A lot of it is happening in same-sex relationships.
Yeah.
So, but then it sort of gets worse. So Private Lives in 2006, 61.8% of transgendered men reported ever experiencing abuse.
We're having nervous laughter out of this. This is just, if it's getting worse, getting worse.
How can it get worse? And it, you say it just does. It's horrendous.
I hope I'm not coming off as droll or
droll at all. Sorry, when we're speaking about this though, we have to acknowledge the fact that because there isn't a lot of statistics here, and what we're finding out from here is still relatively new. But if we're still getting a huge percentage, like 40% as a starter off, and that definitely indicates that, especially as a community, even though there is awareness campaigns and there is support, we really need to investigate further about that. And I think also have a more less monopolizing view upon our rights issues, especially inside our own community. Sorry, please continue, Travis.
I think that's a really good point. I don't want to leave anyone out from the stats.
Carry on.
Because I think it's important, gay men also can be victims of domestic violence. In the Coming Forward report in 2008, about 29% of all the male respondents reported same-sex partner abuse. From Private Lives, about 36.4% of transgender females, 36.4% of trans females reported ever experiencing domestic violence. About the same of intersex males, and 42.9% of intersex females. So there's a need to, I guess, not just have a one-size-fits-all strategy even just for the LGBTI community. There's levels within that. And I suspect different issues and different risk factors for say people who are gender diverse as opposed to people who are have diverse sexualities and things like that, you know.
In these studies, are they purely gathering statistics, or are they giving an indication of the reasons behind? Because we heard Fiona talking about a lot of the control power behaviours. Are they the same sorts of reasons, or is there a different dynamic going on in our communities' relationships?
I'm going to be annoying, and I'm going to say it's a bit of both, and I'll back that up by saying that the power and control dynamic is the same. It happens differently in different relationships or in different types of relationships, but that is the fundamental characteristic when we're defining what is domestic violence or intimate partner abuse. It's that desire to control and to exert control over the other partner's behavior by one partner. So in terms of the reasons for it, I think that there are some different reasons, and that's sort of certainly what's been looked at in the literature. You know, there are a lot of reasons at the social level, but also, you know, when we look at domestic violence in any relationship, you know, the social level, the community level, and the interpersonal level between the two or more people in the relationship. And I think one of the things that came out in the early research in this area kind of showed that due to a high level of homophobia in society, there was research done into lesbian domestic violence by Claire Renzetti in the early 90s, and she sort of found that she did sort of qualitative as well as quantitative research, and she did some quite in-depth research into the causes of domestic violence, and that sort of high level of social homophobia at the time caused the people in relationships to sort of have an us against the world mentality that made it harder for victims to seek support from anyone outside of the relationship or even to really report their experiences, because they wouldn't necessarily get support from people that they reported to it to, but also a sense of that they might somehow be betraying the partner who's abusive by getting outside people involved. And I think that that is sort of an underlooked at kind of thing. There's kind of micro level or individual factors, you know, I think could be delved into a lot more. You know, with gay men, there might, there are also issues with internalized homophobia, that men with high levels of internalized homophobia.
And that comes back to a patriarchal, heteronormative society in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it sure does. But there's levels of overlap, I think, there where it's not that particular model explains some of the dynamics that are happening, but maybe not all of the dynamics that are happening.
So it's and just repeating what you said earlier, it's beyond the one size fit all scenario. We really need to look at the individual factors.
Hello there, I'm Funny Lady Judith Lucy. Support Joy 94.9 or else get r***ed.
You're here with Lefty Pinkos with Patrick and Emma on Joy 94.9. We are speaking with Travis Larkin about the domestic violence situation within the LGBTIQ community. Now, we were speaking earlier particularly about that the ideas of control do overlap here, but that we can't deal with a one-size-fits-all approach. Of course, we are running on low statistics like we always seem to be.
We covered this off briefly with Fiona, and she unloaded on the service delivery shortfalls just generally. How's access for our community to those services?
Well, that's a good question. I don't think it's great. That's my personal opinion. I think it could be better. I think there are steps being made or taken in by many service providers to update their knowledge and to be current with how to support people who are LGBTI identified, who are reporting domestic violence. I think there's a question about whether or not, you know, a mainstream service provider is best placed to provide support, or if a more community-based peer-driven model would be better, such as the Anti-Violence Project, which is run by ACON in Sydney, which has a telephone line, and who their kind of staff are LGBTI, and they have experience working in the LGBTI community specifically, and, you know, they have that body of knowledge. So in Sydney, they do have that service. I'm not, you know, there's nothing to stop someone from calling up the national, you know, 1-800-RESPECT, the national DV hotline. I'm not clear on the quality or level of service that they might receive.
Do we have any service provider, refuges that are just open to anyone who, are they open to anyone who needs those services?
Not to my knowledge. I mean, I think my understanding is there's probably a lack of crisis accommodation for LGBTI identified people anyway. I mean, there's a lack of crisis accommodation anyway.
That's right. Now, some news reports out of New South Wales in probably the last month was saying that they were pretty much full.
Yeah, I mean, it's an ongoing thing. There's a failure to invest in crisis accommodation and public housing. It's not it's not an accidental thing. It's a part of the systemic neglect of public housing by most governments in Australia, you know. So that's why, you know, even women who are in refuges often don't necessarily have a place to go after their time in the refuge is over, because there's such a long waiting list for public housing, even though they're classified as being the highest category of need.
The Royal Commission has asked for submissions, and I think that's open till May sometime. Mm-hmm. And they've specifically called out an interest in some of the allegedly smaller groups to make submissions, LGBTIQ in particular, but also they called out men's groups. Given the crisis in the service provision area, let alone prevention strategies, is there a danger that the LGBTIQ community just gets left out?
Yeah, I suspect so. And I think that's what happens a lot. I don't have magical access into the policy making, the discussions that happen around the policy table.
What?
But it seems to turn into a debate. Well, I can say that, you know, in particularly in the field of domestic violence, you know, there's this ongoing kind of debate. There's sort of like the feminist perspective. Then there's the men's rights perspective who are like, what about us? I think that, you know, like anyone's experience of domestic violence is terrible, but like, let's face it, you know, it's a gendered issue.
See, like, this is why I have trouble with them, is that they won't acknowledge that. They will ignore that. If you gave me a men's rights person who actually spoke about both sides of the issue and acknowledge the fact that there is a higher proportion of that, I will listen to them. But earlier than that, I will spit on their graves. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's the thing, is there's this kind of framework disagreement between the two, and it's really just talking about who is the victim of domestic violence in a heterosexual relationship with little consideration of non-heterosexual relationships or queer relationships. So it's not, and the problem again is that it's not always, I really want to warn against kind of trying to map that model onto queer relationships to say, like, you know, you can't just go, oh, we've got the same-sex relationship, so who's the male, who's the female? Like, it's completely.
If you jump back into a binary, you further cause damages, and also further push on this ideas of masculinity, of femininity, and patriarchy, which are not the cause, but certainly drive a lot of the hypermasculine, especially the physical violence that occurs, as well as the mental.
I really, you know, it's hard to say, oh, we should be kind of trying to move towards a more gender neutral model, because the problem is that it is exploited. That's the kind of rhetoric that's sort of used by men's rights advocates, but it is a gendered issue. But at the same time, that strict application of a gendered model excludes trans people. Could create problems for intersex people. Makes it difficult for people who are non-binary gendered, and also kind of doesn't do a great service to people in same-sex relationships. So, you know, I just wonder, there is some work to be done there, I think, around how to better include people who don't fit into a male-female binary in whatever sense.
I suppose the difficulty there is, and I think we're going to go back to what your recommendation was, which is totally that there is not a one-size-fits-all solution to these problems. But as opposed to, because we have had a message in from one of the numerous listeners who listen in to Lefty Pinkos, and I mean, they've opened up with one of the biggest questions ever: how do people stop domestic violence, and what laws need to be introduced or ads on television? I mean, we already know that there is a huge amount of, you know, awareness campaigns that always occur, but does that really do anything except people become aware and feel sorry and then move on?
Well, I'm going to take the like kind of cynical view. I mean, look at any of Tony Abbott's statements about the importance of the traditional family unit. I mean, he's come out before and said that it's, you know, basically a bad husband is like a bad boss, that it's better to have a bad husband than to not have a husband at all. I mean, he's on record as saying that.
It's something that does frighten me. But then again, you know, we can continue being Tony Abbott bashing forever. But but the truth of the matter is, he does, if not absolutely represent us as a country, but he does seem to, people seem to share, maybe subtly and not quite as openly or as stupidly as that man does, this kind of view of the heteronormative traditional family.
So this Royal Commission, it's important that our community contributes, that our community makes submissions and puts those points across. Otherwise, we're going to be saddled with some sort of shoehorning of this community into a solution that's not going to work.
Because let's say that, you know, if no one is kind of putting their hand out and saying, offering to listen to us, then we need to make ourselves heard.
This is a conversation that needs to continue, and we will be returning to it. Travis, thank you very much for joining us tonight on Lefty Pinkos. Now, we want to do another wrap-up of our support numbers. So if you are in a situation or for any support, advice and counselling, you can call Safe Steps Family Violence Response Centre, which is on 1-800-015-188. National Sexual Assault Family and Domestic Violence Counselling Line, 1-800-737-732. You've also got Q-Life.
Q-Life, which is 1-800-184-527. Or if you've been assaulted, please call 000. And please, if you're in those situations, keep safe. If you're on the internet, for a lot of the support sites, make yourself familiar with the escape button so that if someone walks in on you, you hit the escape button. And when I tried, I went back to a Google search and it clears the screen. And I think it clears history as well. So just please keep safe. We've had a message
from our former texter in, who is anonymous, and that has said that the example ads that show people standing up for themselves, learning self-defense, gaining skills, confidence and self-esteem, how to get out, that domestic violence can end and what to do. Well, look, I do appreciate that, and I'm not saying that it is not valid. It's what concerns me, and I'm sure, Travis, you said you took a very cynical view of this earlier, is that they already exist, and these sort of awareness campaigns. But if you, you know, no matter how many awareness campaigns that you have, if you have a government, if you have a system that is geared towards that, it's very difficult to kind of pull out of that scenario. And you're looking very, very concerned, like, I have not quite understood what you've said. No,
that's fine. I actually think that puts so much emphasis on the victim.
It does put a lot of it. Sorry. Thank you. That's actually a very good point, because we don't look at, of course, yes, okay, you can learn self-defense, you can do that. We need to break apart, as we talked earlier with Fiona, we need to break apart that men think that this is okay. It is never okay.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Hey, there is no excuse.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.